Janice's light led them from under the cottage. As they approached the beach, she flicked off the little circle of her flashlight. "Careful," she warned. "Stand in a row along the edge of the water." She pushed them into place and spaced them. "There, that's right. Now wait." Marcy stood in a fever of anguish. Tiny waves lapped the shore. There were no stars or moon. Beside her, Thad's breath was loud. She was glad she wasn't the one on the end, with nobody beyond for protection. Suddenly, Janice's flashlight leaped on, and its beam spotlighted an object floating out in the black water. Marcy gasped in chorus with Thad and Betsy. The ghost boat, not 12 feet away. She heard a gurgle in the water, and then, in a paroxysm of horror, saw rising from behind the boat a pair of hands with seaweed dripping from between the spread fingers. Slowly, slowly, the clutching hands reached up, then arms, then a pale, misshapen head covered with green scum and algae-scarved shoulders slowly hunching up. She couldn't move. She couldn't do anything but stare while terror melted all her joints. But beside her, Thad gave a convulsive jerk. He stumbled backward, fell down, staggered up, and clawed at the tangled bank behind him. Little whimpers escaped him. "Thad!" Marcy recovered movement and grabbed him, but Thad wrenched free. His cries increased to powerful bellows, and he scrambled upward through the thistles and brambles toward the shore path.
The author of that trick that backfired was Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you. The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. Today's program is conducted by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. Here's Jacqueline Jackson.
We have a special day on the calendar for tricks. We call it April Fool's Day. And I remember being frustrated when I was a kid because I was never able to think up any suitable tricks on April Fool's Day. Yet we're playing tricks all the time on other people, and other people are playing them on us. Sometimes they're pretty elaborate ones, like the one I just read about the ghost frightening Thad. Sometimes they're spontaneous. Sometimes they're intentional, and sometimes they're unintentional. We really don't need a special day for tricks. I was talking to a school class the other day, and we were discussing food, and I mentioned an incident that had happened to me. When I was a kid, I had made a very elaborate sandwich and filled it with all sorts of good things, and then holding this large sandwich in my hand and balancing my elbow on the table, I proceeded to talk to somebody looking in the other direction from my sandwich. And the conversation went on for some time, and when I finally turned back to take the first bite of this beautiful sandwich, I discovered that it was completely gone except for the amount that was between my fingers. My brother had eaten the sandwich while I had been occupied in the other direction. And of course, everybody at the table had seen him doing it except me, and so there was loud hilarity. And it was such a funny joke, such a funny trick, that I laughed too and proceeded to make myself another sandwich. Well, this brought up all sorts of tricks with food that the various students had been in on or part of. And some of the commonest were ones that you undoubtedly have participated in yourself. How do you avoid eating something that you don't want to eat? A common trick is to just mess things up enough around on your plate and rearrange things so it looks as if you've eaten more than you've eaten. Some students told how they would ease their plate up close to the person next to them, and when nobody was looking, shove the offending portion over onto the heap of the other person's plate. I believe squash was mentioned in this connection. And this can work the other way, too. You ease your plate toward your sister's plate and remove a little of the desirable food and add it to your heap. One girl told how she would get up to take her plate to get something and then conveniently stumble as she went past the sink so that the food would fall into the disposal. There's the dog trick. When he sits under the table, you give him what you don't like. Some more elaborate food tricks, one that I never tried myself, but I think someday I might just for the fun of it, is to cut out a piece of cardboard, the exact size or slightly smaller, of a sandwich and put it in, say, a peanut butter sandwich and peanut butter up the thing and jelly it up and put on your other piece of bread and then give it to the person, you see, and then when they bite into it, they can't get through it on account of the cardboard. Well, we got off of food tricks and we got on to bed tricks. You've all made pie beds, I'm sure, for your friends and your family, or put things in beds. We discussed tricks on how to stay up later. I called Elspeth on that once. She's 7 now, and she was using some old tried and true trick for staying up later, staying out of the way, not letting parents notice, or some such thing. I actually forget what the trick was, but she looked at me with wide eyes when I promptly called her on this trick, and she said, "But Mommy, how did you know what I was doing?" And I said, "Elspeth, I pulled the same thing on my parents when I was 7 years old." Reading in bed. How many of us haven't taken flashlights under the covers to finish up the story that we were reading? How many of us haven't stuffed our beds to make it look as if we are in the beds and then gone somewhere else? Several years ago, when I first began teaching children's literature, I asked the students, who were mostly extension students and older women, what their background reading had been as children. And many of these people came from homes where the parents believed that education and reading would help their children to get ahead, and so that if they were reading, they would not be asked to do other things. So that whenever there was any unpleasant work to be done, they would find a book, and then the parents would be reluctant to ask the child to go and do that thing. And several of these students said that it had made lifetime readers out of them, but that it had started out by getting out of work. My brother thought he was playing a trick on getting out of work, and we explained it to him afterwards, and I don't know if at that point he ever did get why it wasn't getting out of work, but those were in the days when we still dried dishes and had no dishwasher. And it was Sunday dinner, and we had had guests, and there was a huge amount of dishes to be done. And all us kids were standing there drying dishes. I don't remember who was washing. And at long last, dishes were done, and as we finished up the last dish, Craig said, "Ha ha, I've been drying one knife the whole time." He thought he was getting out of work. We explained to him that he had put in just as much work as the rest of us, drying the same knife time after time after time, and that in actuality, he had done more work, because if he had been pulling his oar, had been wielding his dish towel on all of the dishes, the same as the rest of us, the total time spent in drying those Sunday dishes would have been less. But Craig didn't get it at that time. The school class I was telling you about, the kids began telling me some of the teacher tricks, and the teacher sat in the back and grinned because she herself had played these teacher tricks on her own teacher. We used to play a morning trick. Once in a while, we'd get up ahead of everybody else, get into our school clothes, climb back into bed, pretend to be asleep, and then when my mother would come in and say, "Time to get up," why, we'd fling back the covers, surprise, we were all dressed, ready to go to school, and so forth. I read a trick on an animal the other day that I've been chuckling about ever since. Maybe you read it in the paper, too. Taiwan or some such country gave President Nixon an elephant for a gift. And the article I read was mostly about the terrible time they had getting a crate built that would carry this elephant in the airplane back to the United States. I think it wasn't a full-grown elephant, but even a baby elephant is rather a problem to carry in an airplane. And so they spent quite a bit of time, the local Taiwanese, in building this crate, and they finally got the crate built. And then the problem was to get the elephant into the crate and to get him pacified so that the airplane ride across the ocean would not be too traumatic for the elephant. And so what they did was to take two tranquilizers and embed them in a large loaf of bread and give them to the elephant. And the elephant took the large loaf of bread, tucked it into his mouth, held it there a moment, reached his trunk back into his mouth, pulled out the loaf of bread, shook it and shook it and shook it vigorously until both tranquilizers went flying, and then proceeded to put the loaf of bread back in his mouth and swallow it down. He wasn't going to be fooled by any tranquilizers in his bread. I've seen the same thing happen with dogs, that they will very carefully eat around the dog food and leave the pill that has been put in the dog food. Last year, a boy wrote in about getting revenge on his sister who had done something that he hadn't liked. And so to get even with her, he came across a garden snake, and he knew that his sister was upset by snakes, and so he carried the snake into the house and discovered that his sister happened to be taking a bath in the locked bathroom. And he carried the snake upstairs and eased it under the door of the bathroom. And the snake, innocent little snake, slithering around on the floor of the bathroom, sister sitting safely in the bathtub. The picture is very clear. And the sister screaming at the top of her lungs, even though there was no danger to her from the snake. The bathroom door was locked. She didn't dare climb out of the tub and unlock the door in order to get out. And the screams brought the family, and the solution was finally that the father had to go to the garage, get a ladder, put it up to the bathroom window, come in through the window, catch the snake, unlock the door, free the sister. The conclusion of the story, as the boy wrote it, was, "I really got it, but boy, was it worth it." So far, the tricks I've been telling you about have been funny, ones that everybody enjoys, even the person who is the recipient of the trick, provided he's not a real sorehead or something else is bothering him. But there are also tricks that backfire. The one I read at the start about the ghost boat, that trick really backfired because Thad was scared silly, and the whole rest of the book is concerned with how to help Thad over this problem that the trick had caused, the being afraid of the ghost that someone had impersonated. There are tricks that hurt, both inside and outside. An outside trick is one that I understand is still being played today on every playground, in every schoolyard, in the colder climes of our country. Has anybody, when you were in kindergarten or first grade, asked you to put your tongue on the supports, the metal supports that hold up the swing? Someone asked me to do that. Go ahead, put your tongue there. So I stuck out my little pink tongue onto the gray metal, and the tip of it froze instantly to the metal, and then there was no getting it off. And the longer you held it there, of course, the worse it was, and what you had to do, of course, was finally just jerk your tongue off, leaving the skin on the tip of your tongue frozen to the metal. It was a cruel trick, and I cried, and the older children, who had had the trick played on them when they were younger, laughed, but it took several days, as I recall, for that tongue to heal up and begin feeling well again. There's an outside hurt trick. Inside hurt tricks are even worse. One that seems the cruelest to me was of a little girl up the street when we lived in Ohio. She was not a popular girl. She did things differently. She was a bright girl, but she wasn't in the gang. And one day she came down to me with a shining face and wanted to buy one of my books because she had been invited to a birthday party and she wanted to give the book for a present. And so I sold her one of my books, and she wrote in it to the person that had invited her to the party. And some weeks later, I asked her mother about the party and about the book, and her mother said to me, "Mimi went to the party and discovered that there wasn't any party." That this group of girls had thought this up as a trick to invite this unpopular girl to a party that was non-existent. And my heart ached for Mimi, and yet what could I do or what could I say? It was a very cruel trick. Maybe finish on a trick that isn't quite so cruel but is also a sort of dirty trick. I think there are dirty tricks as well as funny tricks. Maybe you read a couple of years ago in either Dear Abby or Ann Landers where a woman wrote in just furious because her neighbor had had a party a week or two before and had made some very tasty appetizers. And she had asked her friend sometime later what was in the appetizers that she had made. And the friend laughed and said, "Oh," she said, "my husband and I had a bet. I said that I could make dog food taste good and fool people, and he bet that I couldn't. And so those appetizers were made out of a mixture of dog food and mayonnaise and onion and who knows what all else, and spread on crackers and put under the grill. And everybody liked them, and I won the bet." This neighbor was furious because when she went to a party, she didn't want to be eating dog food appetizers. Well, today, let's write about tricks. Let's write about our teacher tricks, our parent tricks, our food tricks, our bedtime tricks. Let's write about the tricks that we've thought were funny, but that backfired. That instead of the trick being on the other guy, turned out to be on us. Let's talk maybe about the tricks that hurt, like tongues frozen to metal. Let's talk maybe about tricks that hurt on the inside. I'm sure that we have all experienced every sort of trick.
The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively. These programs are produced by WHA Radio, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.